You're listening to The Music Show with Greg Dixon, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Music Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Greg Dixon, and we are live as we are every Thursday, 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Saturday, 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Please tune in, LA Talk Radio. You can watch it on Facebook, YouTube, download the app. We have all kinds of different avenues for you to pay attention and keep up with the show. I want to start off the show by thanking my sponsor, Liquid Death Mountain Water, and welcome my guest, DJ Yella, from the world's most dangerous group.
Thank you.
Welcome to the show. Good to see you.
Oh, I'm feeling good.
Thank you for making the trip.
Oh, yeah.
Man, I tell you, I'm so honored to sit here and talk to you. And just a few minutes that we were able to talk before we started the show, to see how grounded and just kind-hearted you are. I just want to say thank you for that. You know, sometimes you meet your heroes and you're not sure what to expect.
Yeah.
You know, you're somebody that I've been following for many years. I've been a huge fan of hip-hop music. I started this show called The Music Show, and one of the main purposes was I kind of wanted to make it like sports talk for music fans.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was, you know, I'm all about interviewing, and I don't like to use the word interview, more of having a conversation gentlemen such as yourself that have wrote music that will stand the test of time.
Yeah.
That will change the world. That has changed the world.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of punk rock, country music, everything, all genres. I put the music show together basically to play songs from the 70s to present to remind people, oh, I forgot about that song. Yeah. That's the jam right there. That's a good song. And so that was the whole purpose for my show. So I wanted to just kind of elaborate on that and just let you know that I've been a big fan of hip hop music, especially 80s hip hop music for a very, very long time. The NWA years, the DJ Quicks, all those guys, you know, Too Short, Run DMC, LL Cool J, you know, those were when
going
I
way back
when I'm going way, when I got my first check, my first paycheck, I worked at the swap meet, and the tapes I bought was NWA. It was then it was Run DMC, Raising Hell, LL Cool J, and Metallica.
Wow.
So I was all over the map.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I just figured I'd throw that out there. Hey, I got to tell you, I read this book. Mm-hmm. I read this book in 4 days.
Wow, that's good. That's good.
I went back with a highlighter.
Yeah.
And I highlighted things in this book.
Mm-hmm.
This book, I got to tell you something. It was like watching a Netflix movie for
really?
Me. I would put it down, and I'm not bullshitting you. I would put this down and I couldn't wait to get back to it. It was kind of like a Netflix show that I would watch, that I would binge watch. Mm-hmm. I kind of binge read your book.
Oh, wow.
And then I had to go back through it and read it again.
Oh,
certain parts,
yeah.
You know, just to make sure that I read them well. So, you know, again, if you're just tuning in, my guest today is DJ Yella from NWA. He's an author, one of, in my opinion, the best DJ in the world. He's got a new book out called Straight Outta Compton. It's a phenomenal book. It's 324 pages. It's a great, great, great read. I highly encourage you to get onto Amazon. You can buy
Straight
this.
Straight Outta Compton, My Untold Story.
Straight Outta Compton, My Untold Story.
If you don't do that, it won't show up.
Okay, so very good. Let's say that again. Straight Outta Compton, My Untold Story. Now, you can purchase this book autographed as well.
Yeah, yeah, from my site, djyellaofnwa.com.
Very good.
I've been sending them UK, Switzerland, Sweden, Germany, Australia, all over.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I love it. It was a phenomenal book. How long did it take you to write this book?
It took me a year and a half, the whole pandemic.
Okay, so I got my notes here because I'm going to talk to you about this. This book made me feel so close to you. I felt like I had a one-on-one connection with you reading this book. The picture that was painted in my head, in my mind, reading this book was just phenomenal. The stories and some of the things that you've been through, your ups and your downs, I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall. I really would.
You might have been a big fly, but
I had such a great connection with you. And I want to thank you also for being so transparent. You were so honest in this book.
You know, somebody else, I've been reading the comments and stuff. I'm like, I just told what I knew, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't make myself look like, this is what happened. This is what happened. This is the timeline. I just started from word one to the end.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing how God gave me all this memory.
Because
it's 93,800 words in that book. I have not said 93,000 words in my whole life.
Wow.
And it's just, I remember detail, everything.
Yeah, I wanted you to kind of walk me through that a little bit, because the book, one thing that I found just great is you kept the interest in the flow going. It was like, okay, we're going to talk about this person, but we're going to get back to them later in the book.
Yeah.
And then there were people in the book that we would talk about in chapter 1 and 2 that came back into the book in chapter 10 and 11, which was rad, because I'm just like, oh, that's right, I forgot about those people. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it was a total Netflix show, dude.
Wow.
I was like, okay, wow, that's insane. I remember, you know, Mark and Big Chuck when you started the band, like all that stuff. And then, you know, so when you wrote this book, was there a lot of going back and forth? Like, you write a paragraph, like let's say you wrote chapter 1 and then, or probably not chapter 1 because that's more the beginning.
Yeah.
But like, let's say you get halfway through the book and then you're starting to write chapters later down the road. Do you kind of go back and go, you know what? I kind of think I want to put that back, chapter 10, that paragraph, maybe back in chapter 6?
I really started from the beginning to the end. I wrote it in sequence.
Okay.
Maybe every once in a while, the girl named Johnny Gooseby, you know, my editor, and I tell her, oh, I want to add this. I kept going back adding, but I didn't really move whole paragraph. I just went in order. Just how it's wrote and read,
right?
That's how I wrote it.
It's crazy because I would read it and there was that anticipation to read the next page. And you kind of like in certain parts, you're like, okay, here we go. Put on your seatbelt. Hold on.
Yeah.
This ride's going to get good. And I'm just like, all right, here we go.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just like,
you know, so funny you say that as she's, because I would tell it to her over the phone. She type it. Then she had sent me a copy of what she did. And she said, I'm waiting for the next one. What's going to go? Because I would call them cliffhangers. I'll write enough.
Right.
And I leave it there to the next day. So I can, she said, what's going on? I said, that's just, you just got to wait.
She got her excited.
Yeah. And she's been editing books like for 25 years.
Yeah.
And she said, it's just so much in this book. I just can't stop. I had to wait.
Yeah.
She just, man. It was an amazing journey over a year and a half, exactly the whole pandemic.
Do you think the pandemic sped the process up, probably because you had downtime, or would you have backburned this, or would you have still done this while touring?
I never wanted to write a book. I mean, and I went through it twice. I read it the first 6 months, and then the girl didn't do it right. It just didn't come out right. Then I found this new editor, and then we did it again. That took about a year, but it happened to be the right time, because I would have never done a book. I never read a book. The Bible is the only book I ever opened and read. I never read no novels, anything. Yeah,
that's crazy. And so you got it done in a year and a half, and you were extremely transparent in the book. And when you were done, how did you feel? Were you super confident and super, like, did you say, oh, maybe I shouldn't have put that in there type stuff? Because I noticed there was a lot of stuff, even when you went into the NWA years, where you didn't want to elaborate on certain things, which I totally respect.
Yeah.
And I know where your head's at with that. Because I know the kind of guy you are from reading this book.
Okay.
And I know the kind of guy you became.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know you like that, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah,
if I had to make a, if I had to judge your character from the book, I've seen you evolve and develop and to this wonderful person that has found God and that's got a good heart and treats people well. And I think that is, I know that's who you are, but was there anything when the book was said and done, you're like, you know, oh, like, you know, when you're,
well, as you're, I was writing it, she was there as my, do you really want to go there on that? And I was like, nah, I really don't. Because I didn't want to throw nobody under the bus.
Sure.
Except me.
Right.
I'll run myself over with the bus. So I just, some stuff I kept out, I just like, no, that's just private. I'm just going to leave it at that.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen things. I've, you know, heard things, you know, crazy stuff. But I said, no, I didn't think I needed it to be a tell-all book.
Sure.
Because I wouldn't have no more friends.
I respect that.
Yeah.
That's right. That's
yeah, because just God gave it. Because how can I remember such detail from 40 years?
Well, yeah.
I mean, over 40 years of living. You know, I just knew it. It just came to me. Just chapter after. And then when it was at the end, that was it. You shut it off.
And once you got going, mm-hmm. it probably just came and it just kept coming. And sir, I would imagine you'd probably woke up in the middle of the night just laying there going, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was sending her text.
Were you like, yeah, exactly, yeah. right? Taking notes, because that's what I did for his book. Mm-hmm. I woke up in the night and I go, shit, I grabbed my phone. I go, I got to put that in there.
Yeah.
So anyway, phenomenal book. I'm just.
Thank you. I mean, I really.
Really, I'm telling you, man, it really is a great book. And I'll get more into it later. But mm-hmm. so. You come from a very big family, 8 brothers and 8 sisters.
Well,
or 8 brothers and 7 sisters.
7 brothers and 2 sisters.
And 2 sisters.
Yeah. All by the same parents.
That's great.
They was married. You know, that's rare these days, you know. But, yeah, I come from a big family. You know, we was poor. Po, yeah. As I would say, P-O.
P-O. You taught me what that meant.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I wondered, like, you and Mark mm-hmm. and Big Chuck started a band, right? You started drumming in the Infamous Garage?
Big Chuck. And my neighbors, Mark came, Big Man is what he's called. Big Mark, Big Man.
Big Man, sorry.
Yeah. He came later during the music days, but Big Chuck and we grew up together all my life. You know, that's all I know. You know, it's my friends right in my little circle. And we had a little band. He couldn't play the guitar, just one note.
One note.
And I was the only one that was a musician, you know, right. I played the drums. So.
Right.
That didn't last long, but that was just...
How old were you when you sat behind that kit?
Probably about 7, 8, maybe.
And you went on to even drum on yeah. studio stuff with NWA and other...
NWA, Eazy-E, DLC, yeah. all that. Yeah.
So did you find that love for playing drums and just kind of... Was that always something that you stuck with for a long time? Like, when you sat down at the kit, basically, did you have it right away?
I just knew it.
I just knew it.
Because my brother, my two oldest brothers, Carlos and Joseph, they were musicians too. And my oldest brother played drum, but I just got on the drums and played.
Yeah.
No, nothing, no teaching, no anything.
I
just knew how to play.
At that time, how old were you?
I had to be about 7.
So the Jackson 5 is going pretty strong right around then.
Yeah.
So did that ever cross your mind with your brothers and sisters?
Nah.
Not the why not?
Nah, cause we
well not to we play two that type years of music.
Apart. We 2 years apart,
right?
So we didn't. I didn't hang with my brothers. I had to hang
like
with my friends.
Yeah,
cause everybody once they get older, you know, ain't hanging with no little kids.
That's crazy. That's so crazy. Cause I think it was March in the book of mm-hmm. 1989. You played one of your first shows at the Celebrity Theater.
Yeah.
In Anaheim.
2 nights. Yeah.
2 nights. I live about 4 miles from there.
Did you go to that show?
No. The first show that I ever went to was there, and guess who it was? Paula Abdul.
Oh, really?
And DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince.
Wow.
That's the first concert I'd ever went to. Did the Celebrity Theater have a...
The Circle Stage.
Circle Stage.
You know what's so funny? In Arizona, it's the same place called the Celebrity.
Is it really?
With the Circle Stage.
It's a church now in Anaheim.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a church now. And there was I think that was one of Metallica's second concerts as well. And
really?
Yeah, they're like the biggest heavy metal band in the world.
Yeah.
And so like, it's crazy that like when I read that in the book, I go, wow. I go, because there were so many things. Like you talked about living in Covina. I lived in Baldwin Park for a little while.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I had a lot of family in the San Gabriel Valley. I'm like, this guy was like right under my nose for like,
quite a while.
Yeah. I mean, I remember you talking about where you used to get your nails and your toes done down in Covina. And you were talking to the
right
lady.
On the,
where was that?
That was Arrow Highway. And she just sold it to somebody else. And I still go there and get my nails done. That's why I don't know exactly the dress because I still go there.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I go from way on the other side of town. Because once you find like a haircut. Once you have one person,
I get it.
You don't let nobody else do it.
I get it. My wife's the same way.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. I totally understand. I wanted to ask you, I want to talk more about the book, but mm-hmm. I wanted to get into something that's not, I don't want to go so far back into just talk about Easy and NWA. That's enough people have asked you about that.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the book, but I did want to touch on. You know, I think that I don't know how many people realize that you and Dre were like the co-founders of this. You created this. You are such a big part of this, mm-hmm. if not the part.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to say thank you.
Oh, wow.
Thank you for giving us this wonderful music. thank you for putting this just phenomenal hip hop, you know, out. And you know, you listen to hip hop nowadays and you got five guys up there. They're all with the microphone over modulating. Yeah. I mean, the beats are terrible.
And they all sound the same.
And they all sound the same. But that day that you hooked him up to with an amp, because his amp went out, so he could DJ at is it Loki High?
It was a Lock High
for the dance. I would think that that would have just made you guys like created such a bond.
Yeah. Once that happened, once he came, well, I met him, you know, that night when I was DJing, and I'm looking at this guy. Who's this guy? Right. I'm the star here, you know.
Right.
It was all in fun, but when he came that following week and said his amplifier went out doing this, and I'm just like, okay. And I, you know, you don't have a car. How did you get here?
Right.
So you walked all the way from Lock to get. And it just from that day on, we was just like brothers.
Yeah.
That was like a brother to me. He was a little younger, just a few years younger, but it was like a brother. That was a bond that we never knew where would go.
Right. And it led into changing the world.
You said it.
With music. And it really did. I mean, you know, you talk about in the book, you and Dre still got to see Run DMC when they came here.
Yeah.
And it said Run DMC only played a 10-minute set.
That was it. Because they only had Sucker MCs out.
So they flew all the way from the East Coast.
Yeah.
They came over here.
They did a Friday night at our club. Mm-hmm. And then the next night they did one for a rival group called Uncle Jam's Army. They did theirs. But they did it with us first. And I remember we sitting on the side of the little stage, and we just looking, that's it? That all you got? Is that all you got to do? And they threw the mics down. Right. I remember that. And Lonzo, he was kind of upset, you know, back then, you know, mic was expensive. But that was it. It was just like, we can do that. Simple. Mm-hmm. We can do it.
And you did it.
Yeah.
Times 10.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because you were also talking about when you first started DJing, you were the last one to go on, and your set time was like 2 a.m. to 4 a.m. in the morning.
Well, my set time was.
Who was there?
Yeah, Dre. That's Dre's. Oh, yeah. When I first got there.
Yeah, when you first got there.
It was only 1 week, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
When I went there on the Friday night, I remember, and the guy named Dr. Rock was the 12 to 2. He was the DJ. That following week, he was gone. I was put into the 12 to 2 spot. So later on, when Dre came through, you know, Dre, that was a year or two later. But yeah, I had the prime spot, and it just like, but the club didn't close to like 4 o'clock.
Right.
It was a teenage club, so.
And people stayed.
Oh, yeah.
Because those were like East Coast hours.
Yeah.
Because you could go to a bar or a club in the East Coast and stay until 4 a.m.
Yeah, because we didn't, it was no alcohol, because it was 16 to like 18.
Wow, that's crazy.
Nothing but soda, so.
You know, and it's funny still because you and Dre were and still are, when it comes to this music and mm-hmm. everything that you guys have created, were the main ingredients. Yeah. And it's kind of weird. Like, I don't know how many people know that. You know, I think a lot of people turn on NWA and they hear Eazy-E or they hear F the Police or they hear whatever they're listening to. And if they're a music lover, mm-hmm. you know, like I've loved NWA for years. I've loved your DJing. Yeah. I followed you with Little E and when you started to get back into it. And I've kept up with you. But I never knew the connection you and Dre had. I never knew that Dre and you were, you and Dre started this. And you even say in the book that you went to a dinner once and Dre even looked over at you and said, if it wasn't for you and me, none of this would have.
I went to his house in 1998.
That's in the book.
And it took me some years to understand that.
Yeah, that's what you said.
Because I remember he's sitting down, he looked at it. This was one of his maybe second mansion. I mean, back then, $1 million houses was $1 million, not these little 200 square feet houses.
That's what you get.
But
now.
He looked around the house. He said, if it wasn't for me and you, none of this would be here. And it took me years to understand that.
And once it clicked, though.
Yeah. And I understand. I said, Yeah, it was me and you.
I'm surprised that didn't register just right away. I'm surprised that you didn't always know that, because me, my mentality, I'd be like, you know what? I hooked you up with an amp when you couldn't even DJ. You owe me everything. We need to stick together. You know, that's my mentality, yeah. though. But, you know, that's me.
Yeah.
But, God, it's just, it's remarkable, and it's just really breathtaking, and it's just, it's phenomenal. Yeah. It's absolutely phenomenal. And I had no idea, so I just had to touch on that a little bit.
I mean, a lot of people don't know, you know, really, because I never told my story.
Right.
The movie, the movie was cool, but it didn't tell all our stories and stuff like that.
Well, you even said in the movie you felt that you think it was about 60 or 70% accurate.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny. Motley Crue put out a movie called The Dirt.
Mm-hmm.
There's one out about Queen. There's one out about several Elton John, other artists. And it always seems like the artist has about that same percentage as you, 60 to 70% right. Yeah. You know, some of it, you know.
Because they got a Hollywood, you know, make it look more exciting, like Detroit.
Right.
We got ran off the stage, but we didn't get arrested.
Right.
We ended up with a citation.
Right. Right. Right.
Which was, we did all this for this.
For that. Right. So there you go. That's the Hollywood part. Yeah. Right. Right. How do you feel about music today?
You know, I really don't listen to music no more. Yeah. I listen to classical, cello and piano.
Well, let me rephrase the question. Mm-hmm. I'll ask it to you in a few different parts. How do you feel about there being no MTV, no Music Plus, no Warehouse, everything's electronic downloading and the YouTubes and the Facebooks and the DIYs? Sure, it does help in a lot of, you know, there's a saying, the good thing about technology is everybody can put music out. The bad thing about technology is everybody can put music out, right?
The problem is almost more artists than fans looking at the artists.
Yeah.
When we came out, just like, I don't care what kind of music, rock and roll, metal, what. When you hear a group or when you hear the music, you know who the group is.
Right.
Everybody, Public Enemy, Run, everybody had their own different thing. But nowadays, it's the same thing.
Same thing.
Is it the same producer? Is it the same person? You know, it's too many artists.
Right.
That's the problem.
It's watered
so
down. Set.
Yeah, it's just so. I mean, hip hop is here. It wasn't here. They didn't think it would last.
Yeah.
Especially in our era. And then but it's in everything.
Yeah.
Hip hop is in metal, country, whatever it is. There's hip hop there.
Well, yeah, because you look at these guys that are, you know, like Post Malone, you know, and these, you know, other rappers, you know, the Machine Gun Kellys or whatnot of the new school, I guess you would say.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's even the right thing to say. But, you know, it's kind of like, you know, they do the hip hop and then they do. Because before up until Eminem, like, a white rapper would come out and you'd be like, no, it's not. You don't get to do that.
Yeah, Vanilla Ice was the only one.
Vanilla Ice was the only one that slipped in. Oh, that's great. He did slip in, right?
But who wrote his music? That's the thing.
Yeah.
I knew the guy who, you know, wrote everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was Vanilla Ice and then Eminem.
Do you think that NWA and do you think that hip-hop music back in the day would have... let me rephrase that question. How do you think music would have transpired back then if it was all electronic downloading and you know, the YouTubes and the Facebook? Would it have survived? Would it have made it? If that was on... Was this YouTube and stuff supposed to come out now?
I think... Our time was the golden era.
Absolutely.
You can go buy a CD. You can go to the record store, look through what's coming.
You can buy a single.
Wow.
Remember that?
I mean, the down is so... Nowadays, they sell more records.
Right.
But it's not actually a record. More air. Probably minus some air.
Right.
But it's bigger, way bigger, because we gotten bigger now than even before.
Sure.
When we broke up at number one.
Right.
So it's just, I think it would have last, but it wouldn't have been the same.
Well, not to cut you off, but something else you say in your book that you did to get recognition and to get bigger was hanging the posters and doing the ripping that you had to do.
Yeah.
You know, Now, I never heard of their ripping. Yeah. That was pretty cool. Like, I was like, dude, that's
right. Yeah, we ripped it. Take you their just name of the place. And all you see is their name.
Because they couldn't go to MySpace or Facebook to find out where. So that's where kids have it easy now because they don't have to do that. Oh, they just post a flyer on Facebook. And it's done. Yeah. It's done.
Go live or this. You know, it's so, because everybody, I hope I don't get ruined by this, but back then, if you didn't have the talent, you wouldn't be on a record.
Right.
You couldn't have made it. Now, it's anybody.
Anybody.
No anybody. Talent, good talent, some talent. It's just anything.
Well, it's crazy, too, because the hip-hop world, especially, I see this in more of the hip-hop world today than back then, is they just hemorrhage money. Yeah. There was so much money being thrown at artists, and their music is just garbage.
I don't want to say that.
Well, I will, and it is. And I'm, you know, I'm half white and Mexican, and I'll tell you straight up, like, I'm, you know what? Funny thing about me is I was born in the South Bay. I'm from Hawthorne. Mm-hmm. So I was just a city over from you guys.
Yeah.
You know, I had, you know, grew up at, you know, Hollywood
Our
Park.
Our studio was right near there.
Yeah, Torrance. I have family in Torrance.
Okay.
You ever heard of Giuliano's?
It's an Italian
delicatessen.
Yeah.
That's my mom married into that family back in the day. So I have a lot of roots from Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll tell you, I'm not an old fuddy-duddy. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, I know good. Yeah. Like, okay, Kendrick Lamar, the gentleman who inducted you guys into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Good rapper.
Yeah.
Good music.
Yeah.
New school.
Yeah.
Good. But, you know, you take some of these other guys, it's okay.
Yeah.
But it's not the Run DMCs, the DJ Quicks. It's not the NWAs. And even just taking NWA out of it because you're here, just it's any of those bands that came up
from that time.
About
this. There's no bands now.
There's no bands
now. No groups.
No.
It's all single artists.
Right. And that's what takes me to my next question is, how do you feel about DJs these days?
Well, because I've been to 100 countries in the past 4 years.
Yes, I read that.
They love DJs, not the states. They don't really go to see a DJ. But in Germany, Australia, they go see a DJ.
Right.
They ain't going there to dance. They going there to... Because when I DJ, I don't DJ like a club or dancing. No, it ain't no dance. I'm performing. So I'm singing with the songs. I'm, you know, I stop a song. You know, that's how I DJ. I perform like we on stage. But in the States, it's not that. It's,
yeah.
The DJs are not... It's not like out the country.
Well, how do you feel about how you went from carrying a milk crate of vinyl and two turntables to how everything is kind of electronic now?
Mm-hmm.
I know you said you went to NAMM, you got with Pioneer, that got you back going, which actually, let me back up. Why did, you know, and I know, you know, I don't want to sit here and talk about your lifestyle of your peaks and valleys when you had the kids and you were moving and you had the house and the boats and the jet skis. Phenomenal. But even in that time, because you even say in the book, when NWA broke up, there were no arguments or no disagreements.
Yeah.
So when you kind of hit rock bottom, so to speak, where you were kind of just blowing through money, buying cars, buying boats, you never connected back with those guys for such a long amount of time and you never played music. Why?
It just...
And you never hooked up with any other artists to play music, like other hip-hop DJing for anybody else or nothing?
Nah.
You just focused on the kids and just...
That was it.
You got into movies?
Yeah, I did the movies for 15 years.
For 15 years?
300 movies.
Yeah, it's a lot.
That's what, because when Easy died and we was at the gravesite, everybody left and they pounded the dirt on top of him.
Yeah, rest in peace.
I stood on the grave with Big Man and the twins and I told them, I said, this is it. I'm done with music. Yeah. It's just... That was it. It was just gone. I never done music again until a year later, Scotty Brothers wanted me to do an album. I'm like, I'm not an artist. I'm not a rapper.
Right.
But they wanted me to do it. Then I had to do the Easy album and then the Greatest Hits, you know, all at one time. That's how I ended up with all that money at once.
Right.
You know, walking around with $500,000 in my pocket.
And that's a lot of money back then.
Yes. In the 90s?
Yeah. Well, you bought that house. Second house.
Uh-huh.
You put a picture in the book. By the way, the picture's in the book. I want to tell you, the book meant so much to me when I read the book and I got to a picture. I probably looked at the picture for about 20 seconds.
Really?
And just really took it in.
Yeah.
And it was just breathtaking to me. I mean, you know, maybe because I was always such a big NWA fan, mm-hmm. maybe because I was a fan of, you know, everything that you guys did after.
Yeah.
You know, I never really took a side. I didn't take necessarily the easy side, the cute yeah. side, no matter what. Obviously, you weren't putting out rap records. You were DJing, so yeah. there. I could only follow you once you started doing your stuff
yeah.
with Little Lee. But
yeah.
but in that time of being stagnant, mm-hmm. you never went back to the drums or nothing.
Nothing. Music was just it. I was done. I had no interest, no love for it.
Right.
When we did the music, we had love for it.
Yeah.
That's why it was so unique.
Right.
We did what we wanted to do. I tell people on Facebook, Instagram all the time when they, what did y'all, this is what we did. We did what we wanted to do, not what they wanted us to do.
Right.
We just did it like the Police song. We just did it.
Yeah.
We didn't do it to, oh, we're going to create something. No, we just did it. Even the music. We never thought of a gold record.
Right.
That wasn't even, and then 30 years later, the Hall of Fame. You know, we forgot all about the Hall of Fame.
Sure.
I even forget about sure. the Hall of Fame. We never thought of that. If we did, we wouldn't be here talking.
Right.
We would not be here talking at all.
Wow. Well, congratulations on that.
Oh, thank you.
Because it's well-deserved. It's times 10.
I mean, some of the rockers don't like it.
Well, that, you know what? If you want to call a spade, that is true.
Yeah.
A lot of rockers don't like it. They yeah. say, well, no, it's not the hip-hop Hall of Fame, but
yeah.
it's, you know, maybe.
But you know what I call it?
Music Hall of Fame.
It's the Music Hall of right? Fame. It's groups that change music.
Right.
It don't matter if it's country, whatever it is.
Right.
They changed it. It just, not just us, the big, you know, Guns N' Roses, they all changed
yeah.
music.
Yeah.
And could I look at, if one thing that has no color to it is music.
Right.
No color at all.
Right.
It don't matter what it is.
I love where in the book where you talk about when you guys were going to open up for Guns N' Roses.
I'm still mad about that.
Because
we had went to their concerts at the Forum. They were there like a week.
And that's when they were on it.
And that was the loudest music I ever heard. I had a headache for 3 days. But they wanted us, because they used to wear the hat in the video.
Yeah.
They had a set for Florida, the Star.
Yeah.
You know, they did all stadiums.
Yeah.
And Mr. Manager got greedy. They wanted to give us $25,000 for 10 minutes back in early 90s.
Yeah.
Are you crazy?
Right.
No, we want 50. But we didn't tell him to say that. He did it on his own.
Really?
And it never happened. That was it.
Never.
That's when Dre finally, that was it. That was almost a nail in the coffin.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to make sure the show got it. That was crazy, because that would have been a sight to see.
Oh yeah,
that would have been just absolutely
two different worlds together.
Two different worlds. Well, and it's funny too, because Cypress Hill started doing those smokeouts mm-hmm. back, and I remember seeing Eminem up there when he was nothing.
Yeah,
I don't even know if Dre caught on to him yet, but it was like, hey, they had a metal band and they had a hip hop band.
Mm-hmm.
I remember seeing Pennywise play with Cypress Hill,
okay.
and it worked.
Yeah,
it worked. And I think that show would have worked.
Yeah.
And I want to even say, didn't Axl Rose used to wear an NWA shirt on stage?
He wear the hat.
The hat.
In the video.
The hat.
Yeah, that's why he wanted us to do it.
Mm-hmm.
He can understand our music. Because we was like both like outcasts. We, you know, they wild, we wild.
Yeah.
And it was a perfect fit.
Wow, that's crazy.
Because I know if we would have did the two shows, and you know, they probably did 500 shows.
Sure.
The group would have never broke up.
Yeah.
If we'd have got on tour with the group would have never broke
NWA.
Up.
NWA.
Would have never broke up.
Wow.
But it didn't happen.
Right.
And it wasn't meant to happen.
Was there ever talk after E passed away of replacing him and going on?
No.
Or is
never.
That something you can't talk about?
No, it never happened.
There was rumors that like Eminem might do it. I'm like, what?
Oh, that.
You know, I'm like, why wouldn't DJ Quick do it?
I know after the
and nothing
movie.
Against Eminem. Nothing,
oh, no.
Nothing against Eminem at all.
That's a heavy.
He
would have been on the ticket.
Yeah, he's the man.
Yeah, he would have been on
him. I ain't
him.
Tripping on that.
He'd have been on the ticket. Snoop would have been on the ticket.
Yep.
But I don't think it never, because they wanted us to tour around the world.
Yeah.
This was after the movie. But it just, because, you know, we didn't perform at the Hall of Fame.
Right.
But a week later, 2 weeks later, we performed at Coachella.
Right. A couple times.
Well, us and Cube was there, but right. Dre came on the second one.
Sure. Yes.
And that was the first time the group been together since 89.
Right.
You know, that was just, and everybody wanted us then, but it just never, manifest. Nothing.
Right, right, right.
It just never.
You know, I don't want to get off that. I want to go back to that. Mm-hmm. But while it's on in my head, something that you had talked about in the book was you never had anybody in your life to show you right from wrong, to save money.
You know, so funny.
How to treat a woman.
I was outside in the car and I was talking to him.
I'm the same way. My mom couldn't catch me. I don't know my dad. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to compare myself whatsoever, but I just really related with that.
Yeah, because if you don't have nobody, you can.
No.
What should I do with all this money? No. Should I buy this? Should I? Whatever. Yeah. I had nobody, nothing. It's all me. Who am I? I'm just a young, dumb kid. Yeah. Learning as
you
go.
Yeah. And I'm the same way. Like, you know, my wife was sent to me by God, whether she believes in God or not. She was, because she taught me how to love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she put up with my ignorance and the stuff that I've done, you know, and we've managed to make it through, and we've been through hell and back.
Yeah.
And I always,
so that's how you know it's the right one.
Right. Because she's always been there and stuck by me. And I just look back and I go, boy, you know, it is the right one, because any other woman would have left. Because why? Because I didn't have the tools, like you said in the book, to save money the right way, to treat people the right way, to realize right from wrong, you know. And so that really hit home with me. And another thing that hit home with me, too, was my stepfather taking showers with him.
Yeah.
I had to go back.
Uh-huh.
Really? I had to go back and I've even talked to a therapist about this, and I go, was I molested? Was it right? Was it wrong?
I mean, like, when I was little, my father, that was the only time, because he lived in Compton and my mother had moved to L.A. And I don't, at the first time, take a shower. Okay, I'm just in the shower. Sure. You know, nothing going on, but it just, I don't know. I was kind of weird. Now I can think about it like, no, you shouldn't take.
You would never do that.
No, you don't take. You don't get in the tub with your. You know, it just nowadays it's just too much crazy. You know, it just.
Well, and the funny thing for me is that wasn't even my real dad.
Oh, yeah, that's even different.
So you're kind of like, oh man, like
When you think about it now, you're like, wait a minute,
right?
Are they looking at me, or you know, just that. That's, but kids, you know, kids hold stuff for years.
And they say that those first few years are years that are going to develop a child.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether it's going to turn to a,
God forbid. I was a sex fiend.
Yeah.
Since I was a sex fiend. I just, I love women.
Right. Well, we see it in the book. I love how you nickname everybody.
We'll
just call that one Mrs. Sexy X. I'm just like, okay, Mrs. Blue. And I'm just like, it was great. I'm just like, that's fucking awesome. You know, there's something else in the book I wanted to ask you. You know, you'd always talk about, you guys were, feel free to take a couple pictures if you'd be so kind to. I think our production guys in the other room, so if you would, I would appreciate it. You talk about Easy always being on the phone, yapping his mouth. Yeah. You know, I will never get to talk to anybody about Easy again, so I just wanted to ask a couple questions. But you talked about one time you guys went somewhere, and it was like a 20-mile ride, and Easy had just had all these dimes in the car, and every mile he had to stop. Who was he calling?
Was he calling
his baby's mama? Was he selling drugs? What was he doing?
It was the baby mama.
Okay.
Matter of fact, it was the same one? I'm not going to say her name, but it was the baby mama who's the son. I'm the godfather.
Right.
Oh. So you have to know. If you read the book, you know.
Yeah, I know.
So he would have a bunch of dimes, you know, every few blocks. He's called a payphone, because there was payphones back then. And by the time we get to Hollywood to get to KDA or wherever we go.
Sure.
It take 2 hours for a 20-minute ride.
Right, right.
And we just sitting in the car like, oh, my God. Because he had pager and it just every other block. It just,
that's crazy. I had to ask you about that because I didn't know. You know, isn't it funny that NWA and Easy and all that, Easy was a good businessman.
Yeah. I mean, he was a, you know, drug dealer.
He was a drug dealer.
So you knew how to watch stuff.
Right.
But see, the problem was when other people's in charge.
Right.
He just keeps showing money in front of you. You don't know what's going on.
Right.
You don't know what's going on behind the door.
Sure.
But that's what I said. When the group broke up, it wasn't because we was mad or had nothing to do with it. It was outsiders.
Yeah.
Influencing. Had entrance.
Right.
In whatever they have interest in.
Right.
That's what killed the group.
When Easy, when you guys taught Easy how to spit, rhyme, whatever, mm-hmm. in the beginning, then NW breaks up. Everyone goes on. Diss songs are written. He writes whatever he writes.
Yeah.
You know, he had the courage to still come back and write these songs and rhymes that were diss songs on some songs weren't, some yeah. songs weren't. But eliminate the diss songs because I don't care mm-hmm. about that. But the songs that he wrote, like, you know, Easy Does It or mm-hmm. whatever, where did he develop, like, after you, Ren, and Dre taught him how to rhyme, then he just got it one day and became a, because his voice was always very distinctive.
Yeah.
So that's why people gravitated to it. But where did his flow and his momentum and his lyrics actually start to come from later in life? Because you guys taught him.
Well, it was always the person writing the song.
Yeah.
That's the style. That's his style. The later ones in the middle, well, like the last NWA album was DOC.
Right.
DOC wrote a lot of E's stuff.
Oh.
Q wrote the earlier ones. Ren wrote stuff.
Okay.
Like the police song Ren wrote. All kind of stuff. And then the DOC came on. Easy liked his words a lot. The way his style.
Right.
And we didn't have to punch him as much as the earlier days.
Sure.
Because the DOC had a different flow and he learns it faster. And then after the DOC and Dre and all them left, then it was other people writing this stuff. That's why it's kind of changed a
sure.
little bit.
Sure.
He was trying to write a little bit. He wasn't a writer.
Right.
He wasn't even a rapper. So it was that sound. That's what did it.
Yeah.
It was the look, but it was the sound.
Well, it's kind of crazy too, because I, you know what I tripped out on about NWA and being the first, you know, hip hop band to put out gangster rap was mm-hmm. at that time, there was a lot going on in the world.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the riots. We hadn't got to the 1992 riots
yeah,
yet, but
yeah.
we had a movie come out called Colors.
Yeah.
And the Crips and the Bloods were so dominant in the LA area.
Yeah.
And here's NWA singing about certain things,
mm-hmm.
playing the skating rinks,
yeah.
doing what you're doing. How did you guys escape all that violence and never being put under an umbrella as a Crip or as a Blood or just being in a crossfire of what was going on at that time? Was it just faith? Was it just the Lord was looking out for you guys? I mean, it kind of had to be, right?
It had to be, because the group was blessed.
Because you were blessed, because you guys never had anything bad except for that one time backstage where
yeah.
some guy came in
yeah.
talking crap, then he started socking somebody.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to ask you that somebody is, because you don't put that somebody in the book, so I'm not going to ask. I'm just going to, whatever.
Yeah, it's just.
But you guys escaped this violence of Crips and Bloods that were like, because you couldn't even go to the movies and watch Colors, and
yeah.
you were scared. When straight out
matter of fact, do you know when the movie first came out, Colors, and the guy that got killed at the movie theater, he used to be around us in the Wrecking Crew.
My point exactly.
Used to be around us.
My
in the
point exactly.
Crew. And it just, we just like escaped with it.
You
Our
did.
Mind was not to be that. We was trying to be this.
You did. The first time I saw NWA, I sat right by, straight out of Compton,
mm-hmm.
not NWA. I'd never seen NWA live. The movie.
Mm-hmm.
I sat right by the front door at a movie theater that I went to, and I went to see it in the daytime
mm-hmm.
because I didn't know.
Yeah.
I'm old school. I remember
yeah.
Colors.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's I just, remember Colors.
It's just, we just had our mind. Just like anybody can get out the ghetto. If you put your mind on wherever you're trying to go, you can get out.
Yeah.
If you don't want to, you can just go be a gangbanger, this, right. that, you know. Drug dealer, whatever.
So then that takes me to my next question. Where did your mind go when this East Coast, West Coast feud started with Suge and Biggie? You just had to be sitting back there scratching your head going, what the heck is going on?
Yeah, I knew.
It's senseless.
I knew a lot of it was just talk, you know, because these are not real, you know, not trying to talk about anybody.
I hear you.
Street people.
It's okay. No one listens to my show. You're fine.
It's a big difference. When guys from the street are beefing.
Right.
You know, you're talking about killing each
sure.
other. But on records and all that, okay, it's different. It just, I'm like, okay. You know, I just stood back and me and E just bypassed and like, okay, whatever y'all talking about.
What did you think? Did E died before Biggie and Suge?
Yeah.
He,
Yeah, so he was first.
He was first. So what did you think when Biggie and then Pac passed away? And
you got
this. Even Jam Master Jay. You talk about Jam Master Jay. You met Jam Master Jay when he came here to do that first show where they only had that one song.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you have seen so much.
I didn't realize that, too. You're right. Jam Master Jay. Wow.
You've seen
and,
so much.
And Davey D was Curtis Blow's brother. Is wow.
So, again, my one last question about that East Coast thing is, what did you think when you heard the Beastie Boys?
They was tight.
They was tight.
I like the Beastie Boys.
And that band put out more bass. And, you know, they started out as a punk band.
Really?
So, if you go YouTube Beastie Boys back in the day, they were a punk.
Really?
So, MCA played bass.
Oh, really?
Ad Rock played guitar. And Mike D drummed.
I did not know.
And
that.
They were like a straight up thrash band.
Wow.
Yeah.
But
check
they
it
made
out.
It as rappers.
They made it as rappers.
Well, them was the first before the Vanilla. Well, Vanilla Ice was.
Yeah, see, that was pretty close, huh?
Yeah. I forgot all about the Beastie Boys.
Yeah, I'm not sure who was there. Talk to me about something you wrote in the book. DJing. I never understood what you meant by the pennies on the needle.
Well,
what did that do?
On the turntables. You know, the needles, they're real thin at the bottom. So as you scratching, the needles would wobble. So you put a penny to weigh it down, and you can scratch as hard as you want, and it stay right there.
Wait, say that again.
You on top of the needles, you know, the needle, the actual needle is not the big stylus part.
Right.
It's the stylus needle that's real thin. So when you scratching, the needle will wobble, and it'll probably jump. But when you put
you put the penny on top of the needle like
this.
Yeah,
you put it on. Yes.
Oh, I'm thinking you're putting the needle, the penny on the needle.
Yeah. You put it on top of the whole needle. You know, the needle's here, and then the top of it, you glue them on there, and you can scratch, and it just stays perfect.
Wow.
Well, we used to buy needles from Radio Shack.
Uh-huh.
Them was actually better because they was thicker, and you really didn't have to have the pennies.
Right.
I mean, wow. That was the early days there.
Something else in the book I loved. I think when you said you went to go live with your sister.
Oh, my
And you
God.
Set up the room. And
and he's in the next
Raider,
room.
Raider G, whose name eventually turns into Karaoke G, as you're laying there, he's singing NWA songs.
Because, you know.
Was he trying to get your attention?
No.
Did he want a record deal or he just really loved NWA?
When he drink, he's a working person. Work every day.
Right, right.
On time, never late.
Right, right.
But on off days. He started drinking at about 6 in the morning.
6 in the a.m.,
And
yeah.
the way it was, the living room was here, the kitchen's there, but it's only a curtain between the two. So he crank up, warm up, and he just drink and sing Easy E all day. I'm like,
it's crazy.
What the?
when you got to read this book if you're just tuning in. Straight Outta Compton by DJ Yella, My Untold Story. You have to put my untold story into whatever platform you buy it from. And it's a great book. It's right there. I read the whole thing. You talk something else in the book when Dre calls you one day and says he's out. Do you ever look back at that decision? Are you happy with that decision that you made going that way? Because I kind of, again, I don't.
I talk about it again in 1998. No, in 2019.
Well, you never went down that death row.
And
I think that, again,
and he told
your higher power looking out for
he
you.
He told me, he said, I'm glad you didn't come.
Wow.
He said, I'm glad you didn't.
Wow.
And this was in 2019, that last picture in there with me and him. That was the first time we talked about it since he left the
group.
That's crazy. Never talked about it. And I told him. I was just so young and naive. I had no idea what you was talking about.
Right.
I'm gone? Okay.
Yeah.
Are you coming? And I asked you late. And it took 30 years to give him an answer. Because I didn't, you know, I'm not mad with, I'm great friends with both of them.
Yeah.
So I'm just, I was caught in the middle.
Yeah.
I didn't do anything. So that's what made me look like, you staying with him? Or you know, just,
that's crazy.
I should have left with you, but, you know, just. Well,
thank God you didn't.
Yeah.
Look where you are now. Tell everybody how they can get a hold of you.
DJ Yella of NWA.com. That's the website for the signed autograph books. Or my Facebook, DJ Yella of NWA, Instagram or Facebook.
Cool. Get the book. It's phenomenal. My last thing I want to end on is page 324 in this book. You talk about finding God. You talk about the pandemic, everything being shut down. You talk about the plague came. The Bible is talking about it. I mean, that page really hit home with me. And right here, I'm done. That's all, folks. When I got done with this book and I read, I'm done. That's all, folks. I swear it almost brought a tear to my eye.
Really?
Because I was like, write another one. You know, like I fell in love with this book. I'm glad you asked me to read it before you'd sit down with me. I really,
because it
really,
makes the interviews. We're gonna call it talking with each other.
Well, I would have read the book and done my homework, but I don't think I would have. I don't know how much. I just really fell in love with the book, so I couldn't put it down. Yeah. So therefore, it just made for a better conversation. Yeah. You know, we would have had a great conversation. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I learned so much about you.
We got more in deep. You know,
we really did.
Really talk. You asked me stuff. I didn't know this. I didn't know that. You know,
absolutely. DJ Yella, thank you so very much for coming down and spending, you know, a little bit of time with me and talking.
Oh, thank you. I mean, I'm
I hope
honored.
We can do it again. Oh man, I'm beyond stoked. You really made my day today, and I just wish you much more success, good health. I wish you nothing but the best. To sit knee to knee with you is really just mind blowing. Wow. I can't even believe today. I've had some phenomenal guests on my show, and today, in all honesty, is probably one of my favorite shows. Wow. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you so very much for doing
this.
Thank you
for having me.
Cool, man. And I'll plug all this and make sure to get it out there. Thanks a lot for tuning in to the music show here on LA Talk Radio. This show will repeat Saturday at 10 a.m. and we'll see you guys next time. Have a great day.
See, that's why
You're listening to The Music Show with Greg Dixon, only on LA Talk Radio.